The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Interesting developments over the weekend. New York Times had a story that the Trump administration is considering placing tariffs now on Australia. Why? Because when they had the aluminum and steel tariffs on Mexico and Canada, Australia shipped a lot more aluminum to the United States. And apparently that ticked off the president. It's like, well, can't get it there. You're going to get it from somewhere else.
Right.
Okay, we need to put tariffs on them over here then. I really wonder, this is a president that, like Obama, I don't know what they think on the economy. I know what they say, but I don't know, as we've said before, it's really an interesting thing when you know exactly what two talk show hosts overnight think on everything about economics and their philosophy, and presidents of the United States, you really have no clue. And I say this about, you know, we said that about Obama because he would throw out statements, but then, you know, you knew that there was some kind of belief. For example, he would sit there and say, we need to get rid of oil and natural gas. And he did everything federally to get rid of oil and natural gas. But when he couldn't stop oil and natural gas from being produced on state and private land, and there was this big resurgence, now he wishes to take credit for something that he tried to kill on the federal level. So you're wondering, is that just ego, or is he all over the, was Obama all over the place and really didn't have a clue as to how an economy worked?
You know, I can only imagine how many actual moving parts there are in the daily task schedule of any given president. But the one thing that you can see is that, especially in today's world, given that the current president tweets quite a bit, he's very blunt and forthcoming. He talks to the media. They ask a question, he'll answer it. That works for him. We've said it also works against him sometimes. But for our purposes, it still doesn't get to the point of explaining anything, because we could get an answer. Just imagine we had the opportunity to ask a few questions directly. You can get an answer today, and the answer could change tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, that this is a president who campaigned on protectionist policies when he ran for president. Now, many of our listeners thought, and we were hoping that he would use that just as a negotiating point, and that's not what he really wished to do in the trade agreements. That ended up being the reality of it. Because the free trade agreements themselves are opening markets, not closing markets.
Right.
But then his populist base starts realizing, well, wait a minute, you're just opening markets. You said that's not you. And as he's opening markets, when you look at the goal of what they're actually doing in the free trade agreement, which by the way, we're for. But there's a certain base that voted for the president that isn't for it. But as he's signing these agreements and agreeing to them, at the same time, he's saying those same countries are ripping us off. Well, if you believe that definition that Mexico is ripping us off, you just signed a trade deal that will do the exact same. Now, there are some minor changes where you made it more expensive to produce automobiles in North America, which means in Mexico, Canada, and the United States, which means there's more of a likelihood they'll move out. He promoted that as a victory for like a week, then seemed to drop that.
Right.
And so we, but now he's back to, after you have the agreement with Canada and Mexico, boom. I mean, he was talking again about Mexico. Well, wait a minute. You just designed the free trade agreement with them, which isn't much different than the old free trade agreement. Like I said, there are small nuances, but 98% of it's the same. And about opening markets, not closing markets. And now he's talking about the same thing again. We're getting ripped off by the Mexicans. Well, didn't you just sign a trade deal to remedy that? He is so all over the place on the economy and trade, where you just don't have any clue. And I really wonder, because you had Lighthizer, his main trade negotiator, who's a populist.
Right.
He's a tariff guy. And the first story that came out was, oh, no, everybody in the White House is in agreement with it. This other stories over the weekend started coming out saying this caught everybody off guard. Mm. They were like, what? Lighthizer didn't agree with it. Think about that. And that's when I went, whoa, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Lighthizer didn't agree with this? That it came out of the book. I really wonder. You and I have mentioned the two callers that we talked to that said they support Trump in tariffs. We said, well, that's not what's in the free trade agreements. They were surprised to find that out.
By the way, the president is on the ground right now. Air Force One landed some time ago there in the U.K., his three-day visit to the U.K. He just stepped off Air Force One with the First Lady, shaking hands. One of the first hands he was shaking was with Prime Minister Theresa May. Of course, she's on her way out. The president seems to have gone back to his old hairstyle.
I was going to say, the old hair is back.
Yes, breaking news on the hairstyle. A little bit shorter, but it's pretty much the same hairstyle that it wasn't the slicked back hair that he wore in church over the weekend.
Not real. Some of it's not the exact same over the top.
Yeah, right. It's shorter. Anyway, he is now on the ground. They are now walking toward their limousine, the president and the first lady.
My God, I'm talking about the president's hair.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know.
How low have I gone?
All right. Looks like they'll get on Marine One at this point. And so here's the three-day tour of the Great Britain. And, of course, all the protesters will be out. You'll see that's going to likely be the brunt of what the coverage is over the next few days from the liberal media.
So you see on the Mexican government then conciliatory in saying, oh, yeah, we want to negotiate. But the president said the tariffs keep going on until illegal immigration is stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Then the White House seemed to back off. Well, what we need is start negotiating. And that's why I said last Thursday, Friday, look, the president makes these absolute ultimatum. And how many has he backed off upon? And so I said Thursday or Friday this week, when he's back from when he gets back from Great Britain, we'll see at that point, you know, where it's going. But I really wonder whether this president regrets the Mexican free trade agreement that his own people did.
Hmm.
I really wonder whether he's heard flack from the populist base who was saying, you sold us one thing in the campaign, and now we're realizing in these free trade agreements, they're just like any other free trade agreement. Yeah, there's little nuances. And we said, but with Canada, we win a little bit on dairy, they win a little bit on timber. But the basic fact is 99% of the goods that go back and forth between both countries will not be tariffed.
Right.
And so you're not protecting American businesses. You may be using it as a negotiating point, but that's not what you said in the campaign. In the campaign, you said, and the only way you can get there, you said your goal is to balance the trade deficit because we're losing in it. He used that again this past weekend. He said, we're losing to Mexico. Well, you just signed a new free trade agreement with them.
You know, what's interesting is that there's a parallel here between the outgoing Prime Minister, Theresa May, and the president. If you try and play the populist route here in the States, especially as the president has done, we talked about promoting the benefits of tariffs at his stop in Florida a few weeks ago, right? And getting the crowd riled up about something that, according to their applause, to their according to the cheers, they really did support. But then it was just days later, those aluminum and steel tariffs, you were announcing they were gone. Theresa May on Brexit, she was not pro-Brexit, but she said, we can do this in a, we can find middle ground. Well, no, you can't, not on something like Brexit. But here in the States, especially on things right now that the president campaigned on. When it comes to tariffs, by the way, we have to remind folks that he was pro-tariff for decades.
Yes.
And so that's something that I believe is part of his core fundamental belief. We know that he is pro-tariff. He's talked about it for years, long before becoming president. But you can't play the middle ground. You can't promote them as a good thing and say, look at all the money coming into the coffers and the treasury. And we're, you know, essentially you're promising at that point you're going to keep it up. That's a good thing. You have to be consistent. If you're pro-tariff, you're going to have to be consistent. You can't play. There is no middle ground here with your base. And I do wonder if there's any flack right now.
Because there seemed to be a change where, okay, we've taken care of it there. They dropped the aluminum and steel tariffs. But then it seemed the Mexico thing came out of nowhere. I will say this, though, because the president said immigration. Hmm. I said, well, if you're going to say immigration, well, then why not say stop drugs, too?
Right.
You're going to stop all illegal immigration. Wall Street Journal, by the way, making the same point that you made. It said, look, the caravans are being brought in by the cartels.
Right.
That you're not going to stop
them. And
as we said the other day, and they made the same point, the problem is Congress.
Mm-hmm.
The whole problem is Congress. And you said you've just taken the pressure off of Congress and put it on Mexico. And the problem's the Democrats in Congress. And you've just given them a break. And you said, okay, let's blame it on Mexico over here, where it's actually United States asylum policy that has changed everything. Because if our laws were different, they couldn't stay, and there's no incentive to come. And as long as there's incentive to come, then the cartels are going to be able to get around anything the government does in Mexico, and you're not going to solve the problem. So why? And that's the one thing that the Republicans were telling the White House over the weekend. Why are you letting the Democrats off the hook? This is their problem. The Democrats in Congress are the problem, not the Mexican government.
Right. And it's, again, that's where the propaganda thing on the terrorists from day one, from all of it, whether, you know, this is about national defense, this is about this, this is about that. If you're pro-tariff and you think it's a positive for the economy, then stay on it.
Yeah.
Changing the propaganda in how you're selling it, I think, is doing more damage than just the negative effect of the tariffs. Because what you're doing is you're telling your base in part that those tariffs are going to be, you know, a forever thing, or they're going to be part of our administration's policy. You're pointing out the positive. And then a few days later, you're moving on to something else, and you can't make it stick with either side. So, again, you're not winning. You're trying to walk down the middle like a Theresa May on Brexit,
right,
and it's not going to work.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Road check is a critical aspect of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance's strategy for keeping our highways safe. This year, the Inspection Blitz will take place June 4th through the 6th and will focus on steering and suspension systems. In addition to steering and suspension, check your vehicle's brake systems, cargo securement, coupling devices, fuel and exhaust systems, tires, wheels, rims, and hubs for compliance to help avoid being placed out of service. To help you hit the road with confidence, we're offering a free mid-trip inspection at participating TA truck service locations May 1st through June 6th. Our expert technicians will perform a non-measured inspection that includes your tire tread depth, air leaks, wheel seals, and more. Stop into a participating TA truck service to get your free mid-trip inspection today.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, yeah, I mean, when the president, when his initial tweet came out last week and from the White House that these tariffs go on and they're going to be on starting June 10th and every month after unless immigration stops,
right.
We're like, well, that's not going to happen. And so you're eventually going to have to back off on that, and it seemed that the White House started backing off on it this weekend. Well, I mean, this is just a starting point, negotiating point and all that. But the what happens is, remember, look, Trump took a little political punch in the gut when he backed off closing down the government.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people that were angry at him. Well, when you make big promises, and this is somebody who makes big promises, you better deliver, because eventually politically it will harm you.
Right.
That's just the reality of it. And right. So. Again, there's multiple things here. You know, the figuring's been done. If the tariffs ever went up to 25% in Texas, or 25% on Mexico imports coming in Texas, it would cost Texas $25 billion.
Hmm.
See, that's the thing. Still, a lot of people don't understand tariffs. They believe that only Mexico is hurt. They don't understand that huge damage is done to the United States on it because of the cost that's passed on to the consumer. And then fewer goods are sold. The other thing is the supply chain between Mexico and the United States. As we talked about during the whole new USMCA negotiations, that the average manufactured product that comes in to the United States from Mexico, 40% of it has been manufactured and made in America.
Right.
And during the manufacturing process, what is it? The average product crosses four times. These are integral supply chains that exist for a reason. I just don't know. I really wonder whether the president's feeling the heat from his base that he sold them on protectionism, and they're finding out that the free trade deals aren't about protectionism, but actually about opening markets that we agree with. And I really wonder whether he came to the realization last week. Because really, when you think about it, we all know what the problem is. The problem, illegal immigration, there were fewer people coming across when Congress was enforcing the rules.
Right.
Doesn't matter how many people come across. If Congress enforces the rules to keep them out, that's what keeps them out. And Congress won't do that. And as many Republicans said over the weekend, they're upset because they believe the president has let the Democrats off the hook. And politically and realistically, that's the game that you should be playing.
Sure. I think that it's probably a good theory, at least, that he's hearing from his base. And look at the past couple of weeks, right? There was the rift with China. The deal was essentially set aside. Who knows when it's going to happen? And then you have the deal with, you know, that came up with okay, we're going to put off the auto tariffs for a while with Europe. We're going to lift the steel and aluminum tariffs. I think it's quite possible they heard from their base on, at least with these internal polls that showed them, wait a minute, no, we were counting on tariffs. We believe in protectionism. And we want these done.
I just wonder if that's the story that's not being written. And so the president actually, and the reason he's gone after Mexico, that he actually disagrees now and believes that the deal that we made with Mexico isn't strong enough.
Right. That it's not going to be a political winner for him, or he just believes it wholly that it is not going to be a good deal.
Yeah.
That he was, you know, convinced to do it and doesn't really believe it.
disturbing on so many levels. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome. Thank you for being here. So George Papadopoulos just tweeted 3 minutes ago?
Yeah, it's interesting.
What's George Papadopoulos doing up at this hour?
Well, I don't know.
Colluding?
He might be colluding. So he writes, Stefan Helper and the UK's involvement in handling him in London will be the first part of the declassified spying material made public this week. Lots to cover. Stay tuned.
How does he know it's being declassified this week?
That's what I'd like to know.
Look, here's...
Because he doesn't have clearance.
Look,
now, he might... Again, there might be sources leaking to him. But my question is, why would you leak to him and not, I don't know, Wall Street Journal?
Here's the thing about Papadopoulos. Some of the things that he has said have come true. Mm-hmm. Some others have not. I just, I don't, as much as Papadopoulos and Carter Page are critical parts of the story, I believe also that they were part in overselling their impact in the Trump campaign way back when. And that got them noticed. I believe they oversold themselves. I believe they're interesting characters. I don't know. This isn't it's not a criticism. It's not a compliment. I don't know how much credibility they have.
Right, right. Yeah, it's an open-ended
assessment.
I don't know either.
I could be saying in 3 weeks, wow, Papadopoulos was right on. But I don't look at them as sources of great integrity yet. Because I don't know.
Well, they haven't shown to be just yet.
No.
I'm not saying they're not. It's just talk about, well, delivering a bombshell. However you want to phrase it. Delivering key information.
Well,
because that in and of itself, that tweet from a few minutes ago, doesn't really tell us anything.
Well, here's what it tells us. What he's saying is if that comes out and it's about Stefan Helper, who, again, they believe was working as an informant for the FBI, and also British intelligence.
Right.
I have to ask the question, was British intelligence then the one first monitoring George Papadopoulos? That it wasn't first the CIA, it was first British intelligence. Did British intelligence then contact the CIA? And then did they contact the FBI at that particular point? I don't know what the timeline is of it all. But if he's talking about a bombshell, the bombshell has to be the relationship, right, between British and American intelligence and the FBI. Because if you're mentioning Stefan Helper,
yeah,
then you're talking about the FBI. If you're mentioning this is going to be a bombshell, well, with Russian intelligence, or excuse me, with with British intelligence and Stefan Helper, you've tied in both of those organizations together. Does the CIA also come into it? Was British intelligence also communicating with the CIA? Was the CIA then communicating with the FBI? Was it more than just United States that was involved in it? And if it's a bombshell, were there illegal things being done? That's what makes it a bombshell to me.
Well, and that's it. If there is something, because it doesn't really tell us anything. It points to something. But we've already heard the allegations about possible, you know, British involvement. And again, we don't know if it's official. That's one of the items we've been waiting to find out. Was there any official involvement, or are we talking about, you know, the ex-British spy, Steele, and others that were no longer officially working for the British government? Again, that's the question. Did it rise to some official level, would be the question.
Well,
by foreign governments. That would be a big deal.
You know what I want from all of this? I want to be able to someday look at a huge wall in a museum that has the whole flow chart.
Right. Yeah. It's going to have to be a huge wall.
Eventually is, and we've seen this before. You know, we've seen it on police shows where, okay, there's been a crime committed or whatever, or white collar, and they've got the whole flow chart up there on a huge wall.
Right.
And all the people and all their... To me, that will be the most fascinating thing. It's the most unknown thing, but what Papadopoulos is stating to me is that whether it was illegal or legal, he's promoting the fact, I believe, that there was a conspiracy, which means all of these organizations were somehow tied into each other. Was British intelligence tied into communicating with the CIA? Was the CIA then communicating with the FBI? Was the FBI and Stefan Helper communicating with British intelligence and the CIA? Everything from Brennan and Comey and what were the lines of communication? What was the flow chart from the beginning? And this would be very complicated because you need a flow chart with an ever-evolving timeline.
Yeah, right.
From 2015 on, right?
Yeah.
If it goes beyond even the FISA warrants from years ago, that's the one thing about this. This may be not complicated, but just there'll be so much to it.
Well, it will no doubt be very tedious.
Yes.
Because the FISA court, again, going back to the rebuking of the former administration, that goes back to 2011. We already know that. That's documented. So how do you look into the FISA court thing in October of 2016 without looking at that part of it? Well, now you need to make some time to go all the way back to 2011. So it asks you, so it brings the question, you ask, what exactly is involved here? I mean, you know, the left has been using the word conspiracy over the weekend. They brought that back up. Now, this whole thing is conspiracy. It's a conspiracy. There were a number of Democrats out this week criticizing Barr, saying he's not qualified to go down that road. Actually, he is.
Well, it doesn't matter whether you think he's qualified or not. He's got the gig.
He's already been confirmed. He was duly appointed and confirmed by the Senate. And he's there. So you can try. And they have. They've tried to discredit him. This was the whole point of having him show up again and again and again. And they know this. This is why I think they've run out of ammunition. Now you just go straight to the point. Well, he's not credible. Based on what? So,
in our pre-show meeting, one of the first things that Eric said to me, because we had had a discussion after Barr did his press conference.
Right.
And the last thing Eric said to me, and this is Friday morning, knowing that I was going on a trip for the weekend, he said, well, good to see the show's done.
Yeah. Right. On impeachment, I was like, where is it?
Because it disappeared over the weekend. You make the point. Are we done with impeachment? And is it now everything has to be focusing on discrediting Barr? I don't think they can do it. I don't think after that interview on CBS, you can discredit Barr. They tried. I mean, the only thing they said was, you know, well, he's just a pawn of Trump. That's fine, but you can say that. But if you saw that interview and if you watched that interview, you saw somebody, because we always talk about optics. We talk about what are the optics. And you and I have always, we've said that whether it's Comey or even Mueller, that they didn't seem to talk like investigators.
Right.
They seemed to be emphasizing the drama involved in it, and then this going on, and then that, and then this thing happening. And even Comey today in all of his tweets, everything is drama, like, oh, and this is going to... They don't talk like investigators.
No, they don't. They don't.
And we know that, you know, people have said, well, Comey was never an investigative FBI agent. He was a federal prosecutor. You know that the federal prosecutor has the same kind of mindset.
Yes.
You're supposed to listen to Trey Gowdy. Right. Exactly. Listen to Trey Gowdy. And so somebody made that point a couple weeks ago, and we shot that one down. I said, no, If you're an attorney, you should have the same thing. You should have that investigative mind. Look, we want to have that investigative mind, and we're not in law enforcement.
Right.
And I think a lot of Americans just watching a crime show love having that investigative mindset of who did it. Where does the puzzle lead?
And what are the facts? What's the truth?
What are the facts? It's funny because it was you told me, you said, could Barbie, Dick Cheney's brother, just by the way that they
his
talk,
mannerisms.
The mannerisms,
right.
Nothing excites him either way. He's not getting too high. He's getting too low. He simply says, this is the law.
Right.
And I care about the law, and I will, implement the law. There seems to be no excitement level or drama level to him at all. That right. sells extremely well. And I think the Democrats, after he had his interview with CBS on Friday, that might be part of why we sense, impeachment is gone, because I think they're going to turn all of their ammunition on Barr. I don't think they have any other choice, because they know it's coming down. And if it comes down starting this week, it just is going to roll like a snowball.
You know, one thing that he said, Attorney General Barr, when he traveled abroad recently before he went to Alaska, he was traveling abroad, went to Central America. They were dealing with some MS-13 issues, essentially trying to get other governments on board with controlling MS-13 and their activity here in the States. But when he was doing that, one of the comments he made is, I want to get back to doing the business of the Attorney General. I had to get away to once again focus on doing the business. And I know it sounds like a political non-statement, but he does come off as one of those guys that, look, I've been assigned, I'm going to do the job. And I really don't believe that if he found something that were damning to this president or administration, that he would try and cover that up. He would try and dismiss it. I think he's one that is going to go through process.
There's no evidence that he would do that.
Right.
We until Mueller's report came out, we had said, look, if he doesn't go down the road of the FISA warrant, then we know it's a political hack job.
Yes.
Because any investigator has to.
Yep.
You have to go down. Because if you're so concerned with Russian collusion and Russian influence, you can't ignore the dossier.
Right.
You can't.
Right.
Because it came straight from the Kremlin.
Right. And now now they're at the point of calling it a conspiracy theory.
Well, that's not going to hold any water.
It's not.
That's not that.
We already have documents.
Right.
We already have documents on these events.
Yeah, you're even talking to very few liberals out
right.
there. The thing about what we know already is we all know it, and everybody's in agreement that it happened.
Yes. It's documented.
Yeah. And there's nobody disagreeing the dots that have already been connected.
Was it properly predicated? That's the question.
Yeah.
To what extent, and was this a pattern of behavior? Was this isolated to 2012 and Trump?
I think what you saw...
Or 2016.
I think you may be right. I think that they're now thinking impeachment isn't going anywhere. We have to discredit Barr.
Right.
Because if what's coming down the pike is as serious as it might be at members of the Obama administration, nobody will be thinking impeachment or talking about Trump anymore.
Right, exactly.
That it was important that they keep Trump in there. And if they could have got Mueller to testify, they could have got Barr to testify, then they've got a political enemy that they can hit. If they don't have it, all you're going to have is a news coming out every single day of the Inspector General's report and anything else they find that happened inside the Obama administration during election 2016.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, presidential candidate Eric Swalwell. Sorry, I laugh every time I say that. Says CNN should think about leaving Georgia over the anti-abortion law.
Okay.
He told it to CNN.
Right.
That his network may have to consider leaving the state of Georgia over the newly passed abortion restrictions.
That's not going to happen.
I think all the media should move to high-tax California.
Yeah. Why don't they? Move out to Los Angeles. Very business-friendly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
All Hollywood. Return your movies to Hollywood.
Yes, because they go to these low-tax states and make movies. They've been protesting Hollywood for a long time. Hollywood has been protesting Hollywood for a long time. We're not going to make movies here. Why? Because the taxes are too high. Oh, well, good for you. Come on over to our state. We can use the revenue you guys are going to spend here. Then all of a sudden it's, well, we're not going to do business here. You know what? You guys should go make movies on the moon. go make them in space. Good luck.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. In the news today, the president has landed in Great Britain for his state visit.
They want to do trade with the United States. And I think there's an opportunity for a very big trade deal at some point in the near future. And we'll see how that works out.
At the moment, he has not announced any new tariffs against Great Britain. They're still part of the European Union.
So you and I were watching, monitoring live as we were on the air when he landed. He's coming off of Air Force One and he comes down. And one of the first people that greets him is the outgoing Prime Minister, Theresa May. And I'm thinking to myself, is he going to hand her an envelope? I think something, though, that the is interesting here is you and I were talking earlier, George Papadopoulos, and we don't know how much credibility to give, but he's saying that we're going to learn something about declassified information in relation to the British government. And the whole thing that happened in 2016.
Stefan Helper
and others. And so the question then is, okay, is it credible? And would we, in the back of my mind, is it something we're going to learn while the president is in the UK? Because that would be a bit awkward, but it wouldn't be shocking coming from this particular president if something came out here in the States that showed it. I mean, if we had demonstration, clear, and this is what I would certainly ask for, clear demonstration, if you're going to try and make a political point, that you bring evidence as if you're making a legal point. I don't care if he's standing in the center of London or if he's standing in the White House when it happens. That point should be made. But I wonder if George Stephanopoulos is onto something here. And again, if there is anything, any kind of declassified information that links that whole thing to the British government, that would be huge.
Well, I mean, it would be huge, especially if he's over there, if the president is over there when it comes out. Now, it's a 3-day state visit, we don't know what, I almost said Stephanopoulos.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what Papadopoulos,
right.
what specifically he is talking about is going to be released this week.
Right.
The only thing it could be is the Inspector General's report. How he would know that, we don't know. But if the Inspector General's report is released this week, and that's another story that we've been covering here, that we just feel that it seems as if the rhetoric, now it could just be the fact that, you know, Congress isn't around.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. But it seems that the impeachment talk quieted down a little bit after Barr's interview on CBS. And Williams Barr interview, in our opinion, was a great interview. I mean, right. the optics of it. He came across as no nonsense, no drama.
Right.
It's exactly
not reactionary.
Exactly the opposite of what you get from Brennan, Comey, Mueller, and I think that's significant. I do think that there is a significant portion of the population that is just looking for somebody who they believe can be honest to tell them the whole story.
Well, without the grandstanding, remember the two times that Comey was on Capitol Hill, you know, and I really was expecting them, you know, I thought, well, man, did his lawyers bring in some, like, patriotic music to start playing while he goes into this whole spiel? Because at times that's what he did. It was grandstanding. And that's not what I want to hear from top investigators. What I want to hear is the facts. This is what we found. This is what we're concerned with. And this is what you heard from Attorney General Barr on the interview Friday morning with CBS. I think it was pretty straightforward. These are my concerns. These are what I have questions about. He did not condemn anyone.
No, he did not. He didn't condemn anybody. He just, you know, he did what I want from an attorney general, from somebody in law enforcement. And it seems, and we have stated this a lot, and if you've listened to this show, and thank you for the people that have, you know, let us know and communicated with us that you like the fact that we have said we're not going to do this in a partisan way. We aren't trying to protect anybody. Right. We want to find out what the truth is, and we hope in this entire thing that we've been covering it for over almost 2.5 years now, and we said it from the very beginning, we're going to look at this as, you know, from an investigator's point of view. Where does the evidence lead you? You hear a lot of that precise wording coming out of the attorney general. And I do believe, I do believe that there are many Americans out there, and I would probably say a significant number of Democrats who aren't on social media.
Yeah, okay.
As soon as Democrats go on social media, they're nuts. if you want a sign of, no, I'm just, but that, and this has been our point all along, when you think of the possibilities here of the fact that, you know, we actually do care about if a foreign government, you know, tries to hack in and do something to the election, we would be very upset we would want severe punishment to anybody who's running for political office, who is using a foreign government to hack into election machines. You know, that would be, you would be technically not treason, but you are betraying the country at that point. You're betraying the Constitution of the United States. That would affect us deeply if that was done. It also affects us deeply if somebody else, the party in power, attempts to destroy the credibility of the 2016 election by using Russian propaganda and disinformation. That is also extremely upsetting. The people that are supposed to protect us from that, if it's found that they actually used and legitimized that in order to get a secret warrant on a presidential candidate's campaign and also to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election, we also want to know that we want to know it, and we want to root out that rot inside of law enforcement. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to, you know, and I'm talking about federal law enforcement at the highest levels.
Right.
Because I don't believe that. I know that the average FBI agent does not agree with what happened and Comey taking over the investigation and the politicians handling the investigation instead of the rank and file civil servant FBI agents that are investigators and do this for a living each and every day.
Right.
That's who I want. And by the way, if I was the head of the FBI, I would insist on that, which is why there's a lot of criticism of Comey for allowing the investigation to be handled at such a high level.
Right.
Because then at that point, as we see politics, and you may be trying to be a Comey. Well, no, those Peter Strzok might have said those things, but it didn't affect it. It didn't affect the investigation at all. We said that showed a lack of investigative integrity because, of course, it did. Because any investigator knows who works in law enforcement. You are not going to, as you are investigating any suspect, you are not going to be caught writing emails to everybody else or to people in your department talking about how much you hate the suspect that you're investigating.
Right.
You're not going to do that.
No. What would you do, even if internally you're thinking, man, I hate this guy. This guy is a hardened criminal, and I want this guy off the streets. What you're thinking, the emails, the internal communications would be what? We've got the goods on him. These are the facts.
These are the facts, right.
This is what we have on him. This will work. We can go to the prosecutor with this. You're trying to get the facts that are actionable. It's that simple. And that wasn't the approach.
If I'm investigating another candidate, Hillary, I'm not going to be bashing the other person if I'm supposed to be investigating this person. Politics never comes into any email that I ever send.
Right.
Here's the thing, Eric. As an investigator, I would never think of that.
Well, I don't want my work compromised by that.
My job is to find my job. You know, it's like Secret Service agents.
Right.
Their job is not to debate with the president.
No.
Well, you know, since I'm here, I'm going to protect you and it's my life and I have the right to debate. No, your job is to protect the president of the United States.
Yes.
And if necessary, you take the hit instead of him.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no other buts about it.
Right.
There's no other part of your job. You don't talk politics.
Right.
You don't get involved in that. You're not writing emails saying, you know, to other Secret Service agents saying, I really hate this president.
Right.
You're not sending it in any official. You keep that to yourself.
Yes. And it is clear to most people, which is why we go back to the rank and file agents are clearly, first of all, they're not in the position because they don't have the same power.
Right.
And this is the problem. Where you have the problem is the abuse of power for those ranking agents and leaders at the FBI that believed that they were going to take that power and use it as a political weapon. And that's exactly the way it played out.
When I was talking about Comey, I never finished my thought. I said Comey talking about Strzok and saying, oh, no, but that didn't affect the investigation. Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Because he put that investigation to the point now where the whole thing is suspect because of his absolute prejudice and hatred towards the president.
Right.
Now the entire investigation, if you're a Democrat and you wanted to get this president and you still believe this president is guilty, you ought to be furious at Strzok.
Yes.
Because he should have been doing his job as an investigator and just looking at the facts. And the fact that when you start doing that as an investigator in law enforcement, you jeopardize the entire investigation and the possible conclusion of getting a conviction down the road when the defense attorney says, excuse me, all the investigators showed an absolute bias and hatred towards my client when they had no idea what the evidence was whatsoever.
Right.
Here are these emails.
Right.
Here's what we've obtained here.
Right.
So you never do that.
Ever.
You never do that because you do jeopardize the investigation. So for Comey not to say that and say, well, it just didn't affect it, shows, number one, how corrupt he is. Because the last thing a true investigator would do is justify those actions from another investigator.
Right.
You wouldn't do it.
No. It can't be. You cannot have that because the entire investigation relies on the integrity of every step and every player from day one.
In other news, from what we can see, the president landed in Great Britain, and the hair was not slicked back.
We believe that there was lots of negative feedback, probably by his base over the weekend, that said, please go back to the old hairdo.
Apparently, he found out the hair gel was made in China.
Yeah. It's, you know, the world freaking out about it. And, you know, I said to myself, it looks a tiny bit shorter, but it's only combed different. It's not necessarily a different haircut altogether. And I said to myself, yeah, it looks like that, you know, because, you know, it was a last minute thing. Mm-hmm. He went to church. He went to that church in order to pray for the victims of the shooting.
Right.
And so I thought to myself, yeah, I don't see this being a big deal as of Monday. And sure enough, on Monday, it was not, because A, it wasn't important. And B, I don't think the president put nearly as much thought as the media did into it.
No.
Just
like the media probably overdid the whole nasty
yes.
comment. And by
just
the way,
a little.
And by the way, they took it out of context, completely took it out of context.
Yes.
As we had to, for the first time on the show, earlier in the show, we had to actually announce the two definitions of the word nasty.
Right.
After the whole...
He was talking about behavior.
Behavior.
What she had said about him and the whole thing of I'll move to Canada if he becomes president, and he wasn't aware of it. And that was nasty behavior, not that she is nasty.
And as we explained earlier, the first definition of nasty is highly unpleasant, especially to the senses, physically nauseating, which would be the case of this country if Bernie Sanders wanted to ban all deodorants, as he had talked about before, banning the majority of them.
Yes.
That would be nasty.
Or make government-only deodorant.
Right.
Because you know that's not going to work.
Or if he wants to make a socialist state, because socialism is nasty, is highly unpleasant, especially to the senses, and to us, capitalist is physically nauseating.
Yes, it is.
And the other definition of nasty is behaving in an unpleasant or spiteful way.
Right.
Which is what the president meant, and everybody knew it.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided not to report it this way, that way.
Yes.
So if you
I'm sure Nadler will be on it today. He'll make a, from his home office, he'll make a statement that we should move to impeach based on him saying nasty.
He'll pull out his nasty gavel.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, it's, that's, what was interesting is, I would love to see the articles that contain the word nasty versus impeachment. From the weekend. Nasty dominated. Impeachment did not.
Well, if the Democrats try impeachment, it will be nasty.
Some of them can be
nasty.
And
by the way, that could fit both definitions.
Absolutely.
Highly unpleasant, especially to the senses, physically nauseating.
I'll leave it up to the audience to decide which.
Or behaving in an unpleasant or spiteful way.
That's right. It could be both in one person.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue says there is a reason no specifics have yet been announced about the latest market facilitation program.
We have delayed details on that because we don't want American producers to plant for a program or not plant for a program.
His comments came at the Phillips Family Mushroom Farm in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, 1 week after a multi-billion-dollar program was announced to help farmers hurt by trade disruptions.
We're not trying to change planting intentions from any producer. Our advice to American producers is to do what you were doing.
He also addressed the issue during a stop at New Holland Industrial.
We've got weather issues across the country. Do what you feel like you've got to do from a standpoint of the way you typically do your crop insurance and based on weather. We've got prevented plant triggers out there. Go ahead and comply with them and do what you would do, not trying to gain a government program.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Looking here, just interesting Wall Street Journal from over the weekend. Last Friday, Democrats for the Electoral College. Nevada's governor says the current system is good for his state. So they found a Democrat who's for the Electoral College.
Right.
That was the important. There's still one left. So.
And the party's trying to kick him out.
The Republic has a chance.
Here's your national forecast.
We're going to see warmer temperatures in the west and cooler temperatures in the east and south. That's the pattern for the next couple days, and hopefully that breaks the trend of the massive tornado outbreak we've seen over the past couple weeks. The areas over the next several days that'll be seeing the most precip, the southern plains and Midwest. We can expect upwards of 5 inches of rain for the state of Oklahoma over the next 7 days. Now, that band of showers will move through southern Kansas, Illinois, and Indiana. A little less rain for those states. But there are many farmers in Nebraska, Iowa, and portions of Kansas who just may not plant a crop this year due to the excessive rainfall. Of course, flooding continues on the Arkansas and Mississippi rivers. Expect more evacuations throughout the course of the week. Warmer in Denver today than New York City. High in the Mile High City, 85. New York, 73. The national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Old white conservatives. Feel free to heckle them. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
Now, it's enough. He heckled us.
Before we get to our audio cut of the day.
What?
By the way, the Democratic governor, Steve Sisolak of Nevada, said the Electoral College is good for states like Nevada because they get their say.
Right. Sure.
Yeah. It's like, well, duh. I mean, it's...
That's the whole point.
Well, as you and I said, the day that they get enough states to do it, and they actually say, okay, we're going to go with the rest of the country, and Trump wins the popular vote, it ends on that day.
Yes.
The next day they'll come in and they'll reverse it.
Because
California goes for Trump.
I suspect it will go one way or the other for this president. I suspect it will not be as close as it was in 2016.
Oh, but, you know, we had a I don't know. I thought we had the discussion on the air. I had it with my buddies because they were asking me about the states doing that. This is when I was in Florida last week. And
right.
They said, what do you think? And I know you and I may have talked about it a little bit on the air, but I know we've talked about it off the air a lot. I think it will be found unconstitutional. When we're talking about where a state says, okay, we don't care where our state votes. Our state is going to go with the popular vote for the rest of the country. Whatever the popular vote decides is what our state's going to decide. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember one time almost getting, this is going back decades ago, I remember getting a guy wanted to fight me in a bar one time. It was back about 20 years ago.
Right.
I was having a conversation with one of my golfing buddies, and we're talking about presidential elections, and I said, well, you know, there actually is no right for a person to vote for president. There's a right to vote, but not for president.
Oh.
What kind of communist are you? This guy's just schnonkered.
Yeah.
And what kind of... He was listening to the conversation. What do you mean? We got a right to vote. No, you don't understand. And finally, I'll never forget when I saw him when he was sober. And he apologized to me. And I said, do you understand what I was saying? That under the Constitution, states get to decide in their own way, who to vote. Like the legislature, for example, legislature could, you know, vote and say this is who we wish to, give our electoral votes to, this candidate. So they can do that. States so have decided we're going to have the people vote and that popular vote decides. The problem I see that I would think, and this really hasn't been discussed at all, but the problem I would see, just initially looking at it, I haven't read any precedent on it or anything, but the thing I would think that would be wrong with it is you, in a way, put every election then on automatic, that your state, even though you as an individual may not be able to vote, your voice should be heard by your legislature in every election.
Right.
Not put on automatic for every election.
Right.
And I think that's where the individual, where the Supreme Court would find the individual representation is gone when you set up a state and say our state's just going to go with what the rest of the country does.
Right.
That
sure.
That your state, your individuals, the individual United States citizen, that the citizen loses their representation in a presidential election. I may be missing something here because I haven't done a lot of study on it, but just off the cuff, because I was asked that last week and that's what I said. That's how I would view it. That right. The Supreme Court, now the left may just go, oh, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who knows what, but I don't know. I don't know how the liberal justices would look at that, because you do lose. You cannot say, if you put every election on automatic, you can't make the case that then in every election that you're, for example, it might be, again, please bear with me here, I'm taking some liberties, it might be constitutional if you said, this election we will do it for, but you voted on it every time. I still don't think that it would, because still, if your state doesn't vote the way that the popular vote goes, then still the legislature has decided that the representation of the people has not been taken into consideration because their representatives voted in a different way. So I still think it, but I think that you might have some judges wishing to parse it that way. But that's what I would see as the biggest problem, is you don't have a right as a citizen to vote in a presidential election. The legislature can decide it, but you do have the right to be represented by your legislature in every election. And that's what you would lose.
Right.
If anybody sees a flaw in my argument, let me know. But
I think also the interesting breakdown when this was discussed at some point, I don't know, it was a few months ago, maybe several months ago. But the idea of, imagine having a number of independent spoilers, as they would probably call them, but independents on the ballot. You could get to a point. Now, Hillary did not reach 50%. Neither did President Trump.
Right.
In terms of that is concerned, you know, everybody says she won the majority of the votes. Well, actually, she won a plurality of the votes.
Yes, exactly.
But imagine then you had a number of spoilers. Because what is to say in this case, and it does happen. I mean, you go back to Perot. But let's just throw, for modern times, Bloomberg. Or a number of them. Let's say Bloomberg, Howard Schultz, Mark Cuban. What do these guys all have in common? Very, very wealthy. But they can fund their own tickets. They would probably do some fundraising. But the fact of the matter is that you could see it get to where it would be a much smaller plurality in terms of who was elected president. Not every time, but that would be one of the possibilities.
If you got rid of the Electoral College.
Yes.
But in their system, you would vote for the popular vote, so they would get the Electoral
vote. They would
votes
automatically go to that.
Right.
But that would be challenged when you would have a formidable candidate who was an independent that came in. Right? Because immediately what would happen, this is the flaw that they don't see now. They see the hatred for Trump is what they see.
Right.
They see the disappointment, the great disappointment in his winning. Well, what they don't see is what they'll be disappointed by in the future.
If you got rid of the Electoral College completely and you had 20 candidates that ran, you would make it so more independents would wish to run.
Yes.
And so you could get, if you did not have an Electoral College, a president win the presidency with 13 or 14% of the vote.
Right. A much smaller plurality.
All right. Ready for our audio cut?
All right.
I want to make sure we play this. Our audio cut from the audio cut from the weekend, and it's William Barr and the last portion of the interview that he did with CBS on Russian collusion and the whole Mueller statement from last week.
You've testified that you believe spying occurred
yes
into the Trump campaign.
Yes.
you've gotten some criticism for using that word.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's become a dirty word somehow. It has never been for me. I think there's nothing wrong with spying. The question is always whether it's authorized by law.
Some former intelligence chief has said the president has made that word somewhat pejorative, that they're spying, that this is a witch hunt, this is a hoax. And so your use of that word makes it seem that you're being a loyalist.
You know, it's part of the craziness of the modern day that if a president uses a word, then all of a sudden it becomes off bounds. It's a perfectly good English word. I'll continue to use it.
What have you seen? What evidence? What makes you think I need to take a look at this?
Like many other people who are familiar with intelligence activities, I had a lot of questions about what was going on, and I assumed I'd get answers when I went in, and I have not gotten answers that are at all satisfactory, and in fact have probably more questions, and that some of the facts that I've learned don't hang together with the official explanations of what happened.
What do you mean by that?
That's all I really will say. Things are just not jiving.
Now, Barr said that he believes that government interference into the U.S. election is just as dangerous as foreign interference. And that's why he's started this new review of the intelligence community's actions leading up to the 2016 election. And he said he asked the president to give him the authority to declassify certain information that he believes would be in the public interest. Tony.
So, Jan, now that the attorney general has that authority, did he indicate whether he'd be willing to work with the intelligence agencies before deciding what to declassify?
He did. Not only was he willing, but he already has. He's already spoken with them. He said they're being very supportive of those efforts. And he said, you know, that he does have the authority to make those decisions on his own. And there may be the exceptional circumstances, he put it, where that would be necessary. But he intends to cooperate. I mean, he intends to work with them, and they are being cooperative. And he said he found it amusing to read media reports and complaining and fears about him leaking classified information. He's been in this business 50 years.
There you go. I just wanted to play a little bit of the analysis afterwards. So.
Yeah, because, look, I don't care who it is that's doing whatever investigation. I expect the same from Barr that I expected from Mueller, and, of course, we didn't get it. But I would want an attorney general or anybody doing this investigation, federal prosecutor making any moves here, whatever it might be, I want that to be thorough because of what we spoke about before. I want zero chance that on its merits the investigation's integrity is compromised.
Well, all we've heard is that we need to ensure that Russian and foreign influence stays out of our election. And here you have the dossier that was paid for by the Hillary campaign and the DNC that came from inside the Kremlin.
Mm-hmm.
That is being called disinformation and propaganda that was used by the intelligence agencies, was used by the FBI to get a FISA warrant, then used by everybody in the Obama, well, not everybody, but a significant portion of people in the Obama administration. They legitimized it and used it to try to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 presidential election. And Mueller doesn't go down that road.
Right.
And he's supposed to find out about whether Russia colluded and that huge elephant's in the room. Well, it's easy because you and I have followed this and many other people have followed it. When you look at it and you see that a prosecutor ignores that, then you know he's a political hack.
Yes.
How could you possibly, if your goal is to find whether Trump colluded with the Russians or any other crime that came along with it, which would mean anybody else colluding with the Russians, that you find in the way and the best information to find out whether Trump is guilty of something is the evidence they got to get the FISA warrant, which was the dossier, and you don't go down that path, you know that you're not truly an investigator. And I dare anybody to tell me where I'm wrong in that mindset.
Right, right.
Because you can't.
How have you done a thorough investigation without starting with the very core, the very basic foundation of that investigation?
And I will ask the same questions on Barr if I feel he hasn't hit what he needs to hit.
Exactly. And if there is evidence that he didn't do a thorough job or for whatever reason he was motivated by other things, then that should be, the light should be shed on that as well.
866-90-RED-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is director of product management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL premium diesel fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. So here you had former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper on Saturday. And he was with the party faithful in California, that California Democratic Convention that was going on.
Right.
And he denounced socialism. If we want to beat Donald Trump and achieve big progressive goals, socialism is not the answer. He was booed.
Yeah, you can't get away with that anymore. You know, because you're talking to a crowd that wants more and more government benefits. They don't want the intrusion, but they want a big government, not an intrusive government. You can't have one without the other. We know that, but that's what they want.
But is he trying to make the point, in order to get to socialism, you need capitalism to pay for it up front initially?
Well, essentially, if you say that we can't move towards socialism, you're defending capitalism.
Oh, you can't do that on the far left. That was a horrible, horrible move.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.